8:15 is our time on the island. I'm Jeff Weaver in for David Grierson. Dave's back tomorrow. Never mind money or water or plain old luck. One of the hardest things to come by on many family farms is family. What sane young person would want a farm? All those long hours, the empty bank accounts, the crops that can be wiped out overnight by pests or the weather. A farm in Saanich, owned for 50 years by Ruth and Lawrence Chambers, might have been the next one to vanish. All three sons moved away and Lawrence passed away. Ruth has turned 90. But as I found out the other day, her grandson has moved in and is reclaiming the farm with hard work and enthusiasm.
We're coming down to the pig pen. What do you guys say this afternoon?
It's lunchtime down on the farm, and today David's got a real treat for his three not-so-little pigs.
These are eggs from the egg farm down the road, and this is just their little afternoon snack.
With mud up to their pig ankles, a coating of caked-on dirt, now egg yolk running down their faces, David's girls, as he calls them, look pretty happy. David, too. There's no shortage of things to do after this. David just planted 1,000 cauliflower and kale seeds in his homemade greenhouse. It's go, 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 but there's no place this 25-year-old would rather be. At the top of the hill, Ruth Chambers has a gong next to the back door she can use to call her grandson. He looks after her, too, cooks their meals. Ruth broke her leg and needs a cane or a walker to get around, and she needs David's steady hand if she wants to step outside. Ruth and Lawrence, David's late grandfather, moved here in 51. Their 27-acre farm sits at the foot of Mount Douglas, surrounded by green forest filled with deer and the occasional cougar. They raised cattle and hay and three boys here. The three boys couldn't get away fast enough when they were grown. David, the grandson, was raised in the Yukon. He says the farming gene must have just skipped a generation because even as a kid, he loved coming here.
We'd often come down in the springtime when the daffodils were out. I can remember Gran, there was nasturtiums always along the side of the house there along the path, and I can remember her telling me, oh, try one of these nice leaves. They taste really good.
I can't remember and that at all.
Fiery hot.
I don't believe I was so cruel.
The nasturtiums and any sense of order on the farm faded away, overtaken by a tangle of blackberries after Lawrence died 20 years ago. Ruth scattered his ashes around a maple tree in one of the upper fields. Friends tried to convince her to get an apartment downtown, but she wouldn't budge. Instead, she worked out an arrangement with neighboring farmers. They could cut her hay and buy it cheap. She sold just enough to keep her tax status as a farm. That meant she could afford to stay. But the farm wasted away. Her broken leg might have been the last straw. But two springs ago, a letter arrived from David, asking her if he could come down and try his hand at farming.
I was in hospital, and so it just worked out to have David come and live here, so the house wasn't empty, and that's the way we did it.
Do you still have that letter?
I do. It's in the house somewhere. I find it once in a while.
What did you think when you got that letter from him?
I think I thought, thank God.
So this is the barn. This is the top sort of.
If anyone's built for farming, it's David. He's tall, handsome, looks strong. When he talks, he looks you right in the eye and never blinks. This morning he's dressed in jeans and a sweatshirt, and he's wearing his grandfather's old orange cap. It's all covered in grease, just like the rest of his clothing. David says he's traveled. He says he got the wanderlust out of his system and wanted to settle down. Of course, wanting to farm and being a farmer are different things. David found himself with 27 acres of trouble. The outbuildings were falling down. The irrigation ponds were choked with silt and weeds. And scattered inside the barn were tools and equipment he had no idea what to do with.
Well, I can remember when I was fixing the corn seeder last year. You know, and I couldn't get these things, they were all seized up, and I couldn't get them undone for so long. And I came in here one day, and the sunlight was beaming through the windows, and I could feel my grandfather's presence in here. And it had been 2 weeks, every day I'd been spraying these things with WD-40 and trying to turn them. And I had it in the vise, and this little voice in my head came in, and it was like, use the pipe wrench, you idiot. And I tried the pipe wrench, and sure enough, it worked. Hey!
David's other ace in the hole was a dog named Little Man who liked to wander. Soon he had met all the other farmers from down the road. They'd drop by to teach him how to plow a straight line, how to put a sway bar on the tractor so that the hay didn't look like it was getting a bad haircut, how to figure out the irrigation system. He lost his first crop of corn and 600 melons to wireworms, but the pumpkins made it. He carved them all, stuck in glow sticks, and sold them in town from the back of his truck. And he bought the pigs and picked up some chickens from a petting zoo.
So we're walking into the greenhouse here.
David sums up his farming career as one mistake after another, but he says he's learning by doing. His gran calls it knowledge by human suffering.
And later on today I'll start the broccoli.
But the disasters are less frequent now. He even built this plastic greenhouse for his seedlings. And in an understatement worthy of a farmer twice his age, he says he modified the design as the winds picked up. This year, he's got a buyer already lined up for his 20 kinds of vegetables. Ruth can only marvel at how her grandson has reclaimed the family farm. David says he's lucky. Most young people couldn't afford to start a farm. He even finds time for the occasional date. Ruth says she usually takes the call. David's always in the fields. But most evenings he stays home, listening to his grandmother's stories. She's taught him to appreciate simple pleasures, he says, and that there's more to farming than keeping your tractor in a straight line.
As I start going through it, it starts to mean different things. When you're doing something, like when the hay's been cut and it's all down in the furrows and you've just raked it over, and it's just a really picturesque moment, and you sort of feel this, not primal, but like a primal flash that you've seen it before. And it's the same thing when you put a plow into a sod field and you turn over the grass and you have the one strip of black going down a field and slowly you're plowing, and all these things, it's just a part of your family. Someone has to keep it going in order for it to stay in the family.